Hi, and welcome to this week's Expert HR podcast with me, Ellie Gelder. In the second of our two-part podcast series on sickness absence, this week we're going to look at long-term sickness absence. And we know that long-term sickness absence can throw up a range of tricky issues for managers, from the practicalities of obtaining that all-important medical evidence to how holiday is dealt with, not to mention the risk of a disability discrimination claim. And I'm joined today by employment law editor Sarah Anderson, who's going to talk us through how you can be alive to these pitfalls. So, Sarah, we know long-term sickness absence is often defined as absence of more than 4 weeks. So what should an employer do when an employee is off work sick for this length of time?
Well, as with short-term sickness absence, you'll need to manage the employee's long-term sickness absence proactively, with your main aims being to support the employee and facilitate their return to work as soon as possible.
And what sorts of things should an employer be doing to achieve those aims?
Your managers should normally carry out regular reviews of the employee's length of absence and their state of health and readiness to return, as well as if anything can be done to facilitate their return.
And that should be done in discussion with the HR department and occupational health specialist, if there is one, and where appropriate, with the absent employee.
Yes, yeah, that's right.
So when managing long-term sickness absence, obtaining medical advice is crucial, isn't it?
Yes, absolutely. As soon as it becomes clear that an employee's absence will be long-term, you should get advice on the employee's condition and fitness for work.
And there are various ways that you can do this, aren't there?
Yes, you could refer the employee to an occupational doctor for an assessment of the effects of the employee's illness or condition, and its likely length, and also what steps you can take to help them to return to work.
And in that case, then, you'd need to consider the doctor's assessment really carefully, wouldn't you?
Yes, exactly, with a view to identifying what further actions you should take.
Or, alternatively, you could refer the employee to the government-funded Fit for Work service, couldn't you?
That's right. The Fit for Work service can also provide you with an occupational health assessment for the employee, provided the employee has been off work sick for at least 4 weeks and the referral's made with their consent.
So what happens once the employee has been assessed by an advisor from the service?
Well, the employee will then be provided with a return to work plan with steps that could help them return to work. And this plan will be shared with you unless the employee doesn't consent to this.
And then a third way of obtaining medical advice is to get a medical report from the employee's GP or from your own occupational health advisor, isn't it?
Absolutely. But you do need to remember to get the employee's express consent to your requesting a medical report on them first.
And then there are the additional obligations and rights where the medical report is requested from a medical practitioner who's been responsible for that person's clinical care, such as their GP or specialist, aren't there?
Yes, that's right. The Access to Medical Reports Act 1988 will apply here. And essentially, this means that you must inform the employee of their rights under the Act and that the employee has a right to access the report before you see it.
And having seen the medical report, the employee has the right to request that access to it can be withheld from you.
Yes, that's right. Alternatively, they could ask the doctor to make corrections to the report. And if the doctor refuses to make amendments to it, the employee can require a statement of their views to be included, indicating where they disagree with the report.
So that sort of begs the question, what if an employee asks for the report to be withheld from you? What's your next step?
Well, if that happens, you should inform them that a decision relating to the employment may be made without the benefit of access to medical reports.
Moving on then, let's take a look at holiday in the context of long-term sickness absence, and this has really been a subject that has caused a great deal of confusion for employers.
Well, briefly, the current position is that annual leave continues to accrue during long-term sickness absence, and an employee on long-term sickness absence can take their holiday during sick leave, or they can choose to take it at another time, even if this means carrying the leave over to the next year.
But only the 4 weeks annual leave under Regulation 13 of the Working Time Regulations 1998 can be carried over to the next year, can't it?
Yes, that's right. In the absence of an agreement to the contrary, the extra 1.6 weeks annual leave under Regulation 13A doesn't carry over to the following leave year when an employee is on long-term sick leave.
So does that mean employees on long-term sickness absence can carry over their untaken leave indefinitely?
Well, helpfully, there has been some case law on this issue, and the answer is no.
So can you just briefly take us through that case law?
Of course. Let's start with the European Court of Justice case, KHSAG and Schult. The ECJ found here that the Working Time Directive doesn't require an unlimited accumulation of workers' annual leave during long-term sickness absence. So in this case, it was lawful for a collective agreement to provide that workers on long-term sick leave could carry over accrued annual leave for 15 months from the end of the relevant leave year.
And the Employment Appeal Tribunal went on to apply this case in Plum and Duncan Print Group Limited, didn't it?
Yes, and the EAT actually read words into the working time regulations permitting workers to take annual leave within 18 months of the end of the year in which it accrues, where they were unable or unwilling to take annual leave because they were on sick leave.
And another big issue that employers need to be alive to is that an employee on long-term sick leave may well be disabled under the Equality Act 2010.
That's right, Ellie. And if they are disabled under the Act, they have a right not to be discriminated against, and employers must make reasonable adjustments for them.
Briefly, a disability includes both physical and mental impairments that last, or are expected to last, 12 months or more, and they are substantial in terms of their effects on that person's normal day-to-day activities.
Yes, that's right.
So if an employee is disabled under the Equality Act, what should you be thinking of when managing them?
Well, you should consider if any reasonable adjustments can be made for the employee. And a reasonable adjustment could be changes to job duties or working hours, or a transfer to another job. You also need to remember that it could also be making adjustments to any elements of your sickness absence management process.
Yes, and I can imagine some employers may miss that bit out. So what else should be on your radar?
You should also be on high alert to the risk of a claim for discrimination arising from disability under the Equality Act. To dismiss a disabled employee or give them a warning for poor attendance may very well amount to discrimination arising from disability.
So you've been managing your employee on long-term sickness absence, you've been providing them with support to return to work, you've been going through a formal management process with different stages. What happens when you reach the final stage of that process?
Well, as with previous stages, you need to invite the employee to a meeting. And in this case, the invitation should warn the employee that a possible outcome of the meeting is that they may be dismissed by reason of capability.
And what about the location of the meeting?
It might be appropriate to hold the meeting at the office, but managers should also be open to the meeting taking place in another location if the employee's condition necessitates it. So, for example, where an employee has limited mobility, it would be appropriate to hold the meeting at their home or somewhere nearby.
And this might be a reasonable adjustment if the employee is disabled.
Absolutely.
So when is dismissal on the grounds of long-term ill health appropriate?
Well, dismissal for this reason should be the last resort and only after all other options have been fully considered and discussed with the employee and after all reasonable adjustments have been made to support the employee's continuing employment.
So you will need to have done a number of things beforehand to ensure that a dismissal on the grounds of long-term sickness is capable of being fair.
That's right, Ellie. And I'll touch on two today. Firstly, managers need to ensure that they obtain up-to-date medical advice prior to taking any final decision.
And there was a case on this recently, wasn't there?
Yes, that's right. O'Brien and Bolton St. Catherine's Academy. And in this case, a teacher went on long-term sickness absence in December 2011 after being assaulted by a pupil. In January 2013, after a formal incapacity hearing, the Academy decided to dismiss Ms. O'Brien on the ground of capability, due mainly to her length of sickness absence and the lack of any convincing indication of when she would be able to return to work.
And Ms. O'Brien appealed this decision with new medical evidence that actually confirmed she was fully recovered, didn't she?
Yes, but the Academy was not satisfied that the fresh medical evidence conclusively established that she was fit to return to work, and it decided to uphold the decision to dismiss.
And Ms. O'Brien brought various claims against the Academy, and the case actually went all the way to the Court of Appeal, didn't it?
Yes, that's right. And the Court of Appeal went on to hold that the Academy's decision to disregard the new medical evidence without a further medical assessment and dismiss Ms. O'Brien amounted to both discrimination arising from disability and unfair dismissal.
So what's your second tip where you're considering dismissing an employee who's been on long-term sickness absence?
Well, I just remind managers to first review if there are any other jobs that the employee could do.
But employers can only redeploy employees in certain circumstances, can't they?
That's right. You can redeploy an employee only where the employee's contract of employment specifically provides for this, or you obtain the employee's prior agreement.
Because failure to do that is likely to amount to a fundamental breach of contract.
That's right. And this would then entitle the employee to resign and claim constructive dismissal.
And employers also need to be careful about dismissing an employee where they have an ill health retirement scheme or a permanent health insurance or similar insurance scheme, don't they?
Absolutely, Ellie. You shouldn't dismiss the employee without having fully explored whether or not ill health retirement or payments under any salary continuation insurance scheme are available. I just remind our subscribers to look out for our new long-term sickness absence documents, which we've recently published. These include a new and enhanced long-term sickness absence policy and complete documents setting out the process for managing long-term sickness absence from start to finish.
Thanks very much, Sarah. You can find the policies that Sarah mentioned by clicking on the Policies and Documents tool and then clicking on the Sickness and Sick Pay quick link, and you'll see that the policies and documents are listed in the order in which they would normally be used, meaning that you can quickly and easily find the document that you need. That brings us to the end of this week's podcast, which you've been listening to with me, Ellie Gelder. We're back again next Friday, but until then, it's goodbye from us.